Hello, and welcome to Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I'm your host, Robert Washburn. This program is coming to you from the Williams Treaty Territory and Northumberland 89.7 FM. For the next 30 minutes, we will bring you important stories and issues facing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people living here in Northumberland County and across the country. It is your chance to become better informed, more engaged, and empowered as we all move together on the path to reconciliation. So join us for the next step on this journey. I'm so pleased to have with me today Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. Welcome.
Thanks, Robert. Happy to be here on a beautiful summer day.
Let's begin with the recent Assembly of First Nations annual general meeting in Winnipeg. There was a call for the federal government to crack down on drug traffickers on reserves. It would expel anyone suspected of illegal activities. It is my understanding that provisions like this already exist in Alderville. It was used in 2023 to get rid of someone alleged to be involved in illegal drug activity and violent crime. So let's start with Alderville. Would the band council use this power to evict someone they feel is engaged in illegal drugs or violent activity in the community?
Absolutely. That's something that we would be taking into consideration if we knew of someone that might be posing a danger to our citizens. So we have the ability to trespass and even ban people off of our First Nation if it comes to that.
So this initiative by the Assembly of First Nations, would it have an impact? Would it improve things? Would it make it harder?
Well, I think it was a general consensus that in Canada, overdoses are like 5 to 6 times more likely on First Nations than off of First Nation territory reserves. So it was a coming together of minds that it's not just something that affects one or two First Nations. It really is across the board. So we unified and just said we agree with declaring a state of emergency until the situation in our communities improves.
Now, why don't other bands have a similar bylaw and structure like you have in Alderville?
Well, I think every First Nation community will implement and create their own laws depending on their own needs. So perhaps they do have a law on the books. Perhaps they haven't gotten there yet. A lot of times, you know, they're reacting to situations. So with the state of emergency being declared, this effectively opens up new avenues for help, for support services from both the provincial government and the federal government. You're entitled to a little bit more help and support than you would have otherwise.
What would be that help and support specifically?
I'm not quite exactly sure, but I'd imagine it'd be in the social services part, maybe with your NADAP worker, which is your National Native Alcohol and Drug Program. It could be for just more workers on the ground, engaging with people that might be needing help. It could also be used for resources to bring in police presence to help enforce and, again, potentially remove threats to the community. So it just gives that extra level of support, as well as making it known that this is something that's going to be cracked down on.
During your term of council, have you ever used this power?
We have not. It's very difficult to identify exactly where the problem is. We don't even have good information on who and where. So at this point, we know a lot of it is off reserve, just adjacent to Alderville, in which case we don't have the authority to do anything. So we have not yet, even though we know it's an issue.
Why is this a good provision for band councils, or why not? I mean, it seems like band council is acting as judge and jury and not charging someone or letting the courts decide.
That's a very good question because we all know that the law needs to be applied equally to everybody. So if you go after one person and not everyone else, then you're kind of picking and choosing these battles that are supposed to be even across the board. So it's either you're all in or you're not in at all. So it's one of those tricky questions that every single First Nation is going to have to deal with on their own. Right now, we feel that the community is overall safe. Could we be safer? Absolutely. So then it just depends on what is our response going to be.
We've talked in the past that Indigenous people having their own police. So why wouldn't this just be an easier solution and a more direct solution rather than eviction bylaws?
Well, we've still been trying to get First Nations representative policing in Alderville since I was first on council in 2019. We have made almost zero progress. We are stonewalled at every step of the way when it comes to bringing in First Nations policing or Anishinaabeg policing, like some of the other First Nations in our territory have here. So we are reliant upon the OPP, which is a good police force, but they just don't, they can't recognize our laws, or they won't recognize our laws, they won't enforce them. So then we're kind of left in this no man's land where we can make laws, but they just can't be enforced. And I've said that so many times. I just really wish that we could get our own policing that would enforce our laws.
And when you say your laws, how does that differ from, say, what's already on the book when it comes to drug trafficking and other related criminal activity?
Well, those are on the books. We have what's called our Chinook-Ngaywin, which is our constitution. And that constitution allows us to make laws for our citizens on our territory in our First Nation. So we have created some laws that go above and beyond what the current federal and provincial governments do. But at the same time, often we just aren't getting that enforcement that we need. So we will report something, and then it just goes off into the ether, and whether or not action is going to be taken, we really sometimes just don't know.
There may be some people who understand that Indigenous traditional justice is different than settler justice, and that it is more restorative rather than punitive, meaning that a more community-based approach compared to a lock-em-up approach. Is that true? And if it is, how does that impact what you're trying to do when you're trying to address the drug trafficker and illegal drug activity on reserves?
Well, the restorative justice aspect is it's definitely something that's almost uniquely Indigenous. It's where you would bring in the perpetrator, you would bring in the people that were harmed, you would bring in the community elders, and you would basically just try to come up with a solution that works for everybody. But oftentimes when you're dealing with, say, drug dealers, they aren't in the headspace where they're going to be, open to that kind of a resolution, at which point there's no reason to have a restorative justice circle. And oftentimes they're not even First Nations in the first place. So we have a lot of our problems aren't caused by First Nation perpetrators. They come from off territory.
The Yellowhead Institute and Indigenous Services Canada did a 5-year study where they found that there was over a 3,000% increase in the use of Narcan, a treatment used for opiate drug overdoses, among Indigenous people. Also, the First Nations are sometimes 5 times higher or more likely than non-First Nations people to experience an opioid-related overdose, and 3 times more likely to die from an opioid-related overdose. How serious is the opioid crisis in Alderville?
I'd be lying if I said it wasn't serious. It's not something that is out in the open, but we do know of instances where it has greatly harmed and affected families in our community. It might not be as bad as in other First Nations, but we know that it's bad everywhere. And whenever you go into a neighboring town, you can see the issue is everywhere. It's not just on First Nations. So I don't know if I've got the stats to say that Alderville is any worse than, say, one of the adjacent towns, but I know what we're dealing with now, and there's much room for improvement.
What are you doing to improve things?
Well, we have taken a few steps in the past. We want to ensure that the stores that we have on the community are following our prescribed rules, so that if someone does need to, I guess for cannabis or anything like that, they have a store that they can go to, and it's going to be have their safety concerns met. Otherwise, we really don't know exactly where the issue lies. So it's obfuscated, and this is how that whole industry works when it's a black market. So you really don't know where to be putting your efforts, and it's just not one of those things that we have a lot of good intel on at the moment.
At the General Assembly, there was also a call for a minimum of 15-year sentences in cases where death occurs from tainted drugs, and it gives law enforcement the authority to access victims' cell phones to find out where the drugs were purchased. Could you explain in more detail what that was and why it was significant?
Well, I think it's important because in a lot of ways it equates to murder when you knowingly are selling a product that has a high chance of killing somebody. So I think when you look at who the repeat offenders are, a lot of these dealers, they're never going to change. They're not going to stop their what they're doing. It's how they make the money. It's all they know what to do. So by taking them off the streets for that 50-year period, you're effectively going to be shutting them down for half a century, and hopefully that will create better long-term prospects for the community. And when you take those bad actors that are always engaging this kind of activity.
So we've talked about some of the things that Alderville is doing, but what steps are needed to address this problem locally? What are the plans Alderville Band Council is exploring going forward, and what are the timelines associated with those?
Well, this new council that we've had since July, this hasn't been on the table in any great discussion. So we're looking forward to having that discussion in the near future. What we are trying to do with creating safe communities is just allowing a safe place for people to say report anything that they see that's suspicious, or let us know if they've got something that might be beneficial for council to know. So these are been barriers in the past to bring people to justice, but overall, like we really do need that comprehensive safety plan that's going to be, that ultimate solution that we're looking for.
Other items that were discussed were Bill C-5, child welfare reform, and the repatriation of artifacts. Was there anything new said or planned in the opposition to Bill C-5?
Well, I think it's been a lot of the same. We are greatly opposed to it. We are opposed that they selected a council of 11 Indigenous people that they seem to just have handpicked that are in favor of the bill. So that doesn't seem like a good way to create an advisory panel. So now we have seen that some of those areas of national interest are ones that we have been engaged with for several years, including the Darlington New Nuclear Project, as well as the Alto High Frequency Rail. So we know that the DNNP has been put into and identified as a national interest project. We know that Alto is going to be coming in on the next slate of announcements.
And we've talked about the nuclear power hearings going on for Darlington.
Yes, absolutely. So this is something that we have heard from our partners that it doesn't change anything. I had a call from the Privy Council last week, just before the announcement, and they said, this doesn't change anything. They still want to consult with us, but consulting with us after the fact, that's not consultation. So we don't like the way any of this has come out. We don't like that we weren't engaged on these big decisions that are going to affect our territory for decades to come, especially as we're more than partners. We're the rights holders of these territories. So we really do expect the courtesy of at least being engaged with these major decisions and major projects.
Is there any follow-up to the discovery that was made that upset everyone so deeply before?
Yes, so we have an archaeological firm has been identified to undertake the screening process. The big issue that we've been facing is that these are now large exposed soil piles that will start to break down over time as you get rain and you get freezing. The hand screening that we have suggested is would take several years, so we are now looking at maybe a way of being able to do that faster with more hands, but we are up against the clock now for being able to screen those soil piles.
We have discussed child welfare reform on this show previously. What was proposed that advanced that agenda?
I think that really we were looking at more discussions. We know that the cookie cutter approach, one size fits all, isn't going to work, especially when we have communities that have different needs. They're geographically displaced, and then you obviously have the Ontario going its own process. So does that mean that all the provinces are going to do that? Is there going to be everyone in Canada minus Ontario? Are we going to be merged? So I think these are just ongoing discussions that we haven't really decided or settled on anything. And I think right now the discussion process is still moving forward.
What was put on the floor in regards to the repatriation of artifacts? I know right now there's one case that's making some headlines, is the sale of the assets of the Hudson Bay Company, especially the archives and its vast collection, which include many Indigenous items. Can you bring us up to speed on this?
Yes, well, certainly our position has always been that these stolen artifacts, stolen items, need to be repatriated back to the First Nation community that they would be associated with. We know that these artifacts, in several instances, have not been looked after or protected properly. So I think it's just a matter of making sure that they get into the hands that they're supposed to be and not on eBay. If you go on eBay, you can see a lot of these items and documents that are being sold to private collectors that we just know aren't supposed to be there. So we'd rather see them repatriated before that even becomes a possibility.
What was the significance of the Cowichan First Nations court decision recognizing title to part of the Fraser River's south arm and the right to fish in those waters?
So this has the potential of being the most important court decision ever in the history of Canada. It's something that recognized that stolen land will be returned no matter how law, much time has passed and no matter what laws have been created in the first place. So we know that this refers to fee simple lands that are held by the Musqueam Reserve, as well as non-Indigenous people in the area. So this is basically saying that even though you have legal land title to these properties, because they were stolen from First Nations in the first place, we are going to revert that ownership back to those First Nations, as well as give those fishing rights that that have been taken. So this is also pitting First Nations against First Nations because you are now have two groups that are on opposite sides of this issue.
Will this likely be appealed?
Yes, so the BC government has appealed it to the BC Court of Appeals, and they could either turn it down or hear the case. I'd imagine they would, but the ultimate goal would be to see this end up in the Supreme Court of Canada, and if the Supreme Court of Canada upholds the decision, then that would become law for all of Canada.
This trial has lasted 5 years. How much longer do you think it'll go on before there is a resolution?
Well, it could easily be another 5 years. But instead of just waiting and sitting on our hands, this is the time to open up that discussion, open up that dialogue, and say, if this does come down, what does it mean for Canada? Where are these stolen lands? Who's living on them now? And give that heads up to, say, businesses that that are looking to do business on those territories or currently have businesses on those territories. Because this isn't one of those things where they're giving compensation for stolen land. They're actually giving that land back. So, what does that mean? Can this be negotiated? Obviously, it creates a whole whack of issues and problems for everybody. But at the same time, it's about doing justice and serving justice. That's been a long time coming. So we really should open up those negotiations and sit down at those tables right now, no matter how the case goes.
I also understand you have an update on the legal personhood for Rice Lake and Ganaraska River. What's going on?
Well, we are hosting our first all-community meeting with our citizens as well as the International Observatory for Nature Rights. These are the lawyers that are working for us pro bono to bring this initiative to its inevitable end, which is to bring legal personhood status to Rice Lake and Ganaraska River. And one of the updates is that Tom Jackson will be hosting an event on September 30th in Port Hope at Capitol Theater. Doors open at 6 and he's having a performance at 6:30, and Alderville dancers, drummers, youth are going to be involved in the performance as well, and all proceeds raised are going to go towards our legal personhood initiative. And Tom Jackson has kindly offered to match with his own funds anything that's raised at the door.
When do you expect that public meeting to take place?
That meeting is on September 27th at our community center, and we are going to have a water walk the day before on the 26th, where through ceremony, we are going to take some water from Rice Lake, carry it in our copper pots in a proper water walk from the lake to our community center, so that the next day the water is going to be in attendance at this historic meeting that's about the legal personhood. So we really feel like that the water from Rice Lake needs to have a seat at the table for this meeting.
Now, you said it was a public meeting. Does that mean anybody can attend, or is it only people who are associated with the community of Alderville?
Well, it's intended for First Nation members to answer their questions. I've been to a few events in Port Hope that answered questions for the larger non-Indigenous community. So this one is the idea is for mostly for our First Nations. There will be non-members in attendance. We're having a representation from the Baxter Creek Watershed Association, who are going to have a table set up, as well as other experts. We're having a panel discussion, and we think it's going to be a really good event.
I also understand you're speaking at the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Brazil in November. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so that's it's breaking news. I don't have too many details right now, but I do know that they want me to be a panelist at COP30, which is the United Nations Climate Change Conference being held in Belém, Brazil, which is in the Amazon basin, basically where the headwaters are from the ocean feeding into the Amazon. So they want me to discuss the legal personhood initiative, what it means to Alderville, how we got to where we are, and why we think this is a growing global movement that, this could just be one of the very first examples, but it's something that could happen across the world. And really, we wouldn't want to stop until all bodies of water have that status. And then, we feel like that's going to make a big change in the world.
One of the most important things we do on this podcast is the public service announcements. What have you got for us this month?
All right. So we have quite a number of items coming up. On September 21st, we have a healer clinic as well as a co-ed sweat lodge, and that's going to be starting at 3 p.m. So if you're interested in attending, please contact Aiden in our cultural office. On September 25th, again, if you want to enjoy Alderville's Men's Drum Night, please contact Aiden. This is something that we do quite regularly in Alderville. On September 26th, sign your kids up for the Home Alone course. If they're between 9 and 13 years old, it's a program that helps kids stay home alone. And they learn first aid. They learn how to call 911, how to stay safely in their home. It's something that my daughters took years ago, and they still talk about it and all the skills that they learned. So if you're interested in having your children learn these skills, please reach out to the Alderville Health and Social Services team. On September 26th, as I previously just mentioned, we are having our water walk, and that's going to be from the Vimy docks to the community center. We're estimating it's going to be about an hour and a half to 2 hours of a walk, and you don't have to be there for the whole time. We will be having side-by-sides coming and picking up elders and dropping them off if necessary. On September 27th is the legal personhood of Rice Lake and Ganaraska community meeting. We are having a Manuman dish contest. So this is a rice dish. So we're putting it out there to our members to make their best wild rice dish. And there's going to be judges and prizes for that. September 30th needs no introduction. It's the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation. We are starting our event at 10:45, and that's going to be at the Health Services Building. This is an event that is open to everybody. It's not just for Alderville First Nation community members. Anyone, anywhere who wants to attend and walk in honor of the stolen children, you can meet us down there at 10:45, where we will start walking to the community center. And it's going to be an interpretive walk along the way. So we're going to have four stations set up where people are going to learn a little bit more about the residential school process. So there'll be a few breaks along the way. So it won't be just one straight walk. And of course, later on that day is Tom Jackson's performance at Capitol Theater. Doors open at 6. We are going to be having vendors and craft booths set up, as well as members from our community there. And October 3rd, this is a really big one. We're having our Prairie Day, which is in celebration of our Black Oak Savannah. We have events pretty much going all day long into the evening. So we're having vendors, we're having interpretive walks through the Black Oak Savannah, we're having speakers, and we're having live entertainment as well, too. And one date that we don't have an exact date for in October, we are having our annual job fair. So this is something that if you're young or you're looking to get into something different or you just want a bit more information about new jobs out there, what employment opportunities are, please come to the Alderville Community Center, where we will be having booths and questions answered. Miigwech.
Chief Taylor Simpson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
I want to thank Alderville First Nations Chief Taynar Simpson for talking to me today. I want to thank you for joining our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this time to learn more about what's going on, the stories and issues facing Indigenous people living in Northumberland and elsewhere. That's all for this week. I'm Robert Washburn. Join us again next time for Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Taynar Simpson.